Hello, this is Byron Richards, and you are tuned into my weekly Wellness Update podcast, bringing you the health news that you can use. Well, as always, we'll start out our podcast with the news of the past week. I, of course, always focus on bringing you nutritional tidbits, especially relating to dietary supplements and their application to human health. One of my missions in education is to help more people better understand the absolute value of dietary supplements to human health and why it is so important for them to be available to those of us who would like to use them. It is completely fine with me that there are certain people out there who don't like dietary supplements and don't want people to use them. That's fine. People can have their own opinions, but they are mostly that, opinions. And the point, I think, being, there's not enough dietary supplements for everyone anyway, so those people who don't like them, they can have their opinions and not take them. But for the rest of us, we want them to be available as healthcare options for ourselves, and part of that is helping people to understand how they are used, why they are used, and how helpful they can be. Anyway, starting out this week, the first article was Gamma Tocotrienol Protects Against Radiation Damage. Now, we have to understand here that the current American population is one of the most radiation-exposed generations in the history of the human existence. We have medical CT scanning being routinely done, even on children, for stomach aches and kind of pointless things. Huge exposure to radiation there that can easily damage the DNA of cells and create future cancers. We live in a world where we have all kinds of radiation permeating around the environment. This includes cell phone radiation, various microwaves, electric power lines, solar flares, especially during plane flights. But I mean, there's just an article out the other day in Science about all the new flare-ups of sunspot activity. I mean, there is absolutely both man-made and existing radiation, which does pose a unique challenge. Well, in this particular study, researchers exposed mice to whole-body radiation, and in particular, then watched the DNA of their bone marrow. To see what happens to the red and white blood cells. And it's important to understand, of course, that your bones are not just like skeletons hanging in your closet. Your bones are a dynamic power plant. The more we learn about what's going on in them, I mean, we've known for years it's where your red and white blood cells form. But now we're seeing that the formation of these red and white blood cells, along with how they talk to everything else in your body, is of vital importance to just about everything going on in your body, including thyroid function, including cardiovascular health. I mean, it's just endlessly linked. Blood sugar metabolism. I mean, bones are a major factor. And of course, bones are constantly rejuvenating and regenerating new cells. And that ability goes down with exposure to radiation. And so in this particular study, the amount of radiation given would be sort of like going through chemotherapy. In other words, it wasn't enough to kill the animal, but pretty darn close. And what they found is that when they had, you know, the control group, which didn't get any gamma tocotrienol, and then you have the gamma tocotrienol group, and their stem cells recovered briskly from the radiation exposure much more rapidly than the control mice, who stayed reduced to 50% levels. The gamma tocotrienol was all back to normal within 7 days, and you know the animals not given the antioxidant protection of the gamma tocotrienol, this dragged on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and significantly impaired the function of their bone marrow. In fact, they did detailed analysis of the bone marrow and showed that gamma tocotrienol actually maintained the regenerative integrity of the bone marrow cells. So the stem cells and the progenitor cells that are within the bone marrow that make both your red and white blood cells were completely protected by gamma tocotrienol. That is totally amazing. There's nothing else that does that. I mean, we know lipoic acid and iodine would be two other good choices for radiation exposure. I might point out that this particular research was carried out by the U.S. Armed Forces Radiobiology Research Institute. So, obviously they're looking for ways to stem the effects of radiation on their soldiers, and maybe on the American population for that matter. I mean, you know, we're not out of the nuclear woods with what's going on in the world. It's just not like it on the forefront of everyone's minds like it was 25 years ago. At any rate, gamma-tocotrienol, excellent nutrient for support of radiation protection. Of course, gamma-tocotrienol accumulates in your skin, and other studies have shown that it's extremely effective at helping to prevent skin mutation damage. So it's shown it's worth also from just the ionizing radiation of the sun on your skin. Great product for help with that. Alrighty, green tea and resveratrol extracts inhibit prostate cancer. So this was both green tea and resveratrol from red wine that interfered with a powerful signaling pathway that is required for prostate cancer growth. And again, we get into this new era of gene-related pathways. I mean, the science that is opening up to people, it's just so exciting. This is truly a new frontier. And they have, identified signaling pathways. And lo and behold, it's nutrients that influence these signaling pathways. Now, they have very long names because scientists are, doing the research, so they don't have a simple pathway name like, cancer production pathway. They have all these fancy names. Anyway, I have it in my article. If you really want to know these fancy names, you can read all about it. But the take-home message here is that both green tea and resveratrol interrupted a pathway that is required for the growth of prostate cancer cells. And so they used these compounds and instilled prostate cancer cells in animals, and then watched the extreme benefit, of the ability of the animals to fight off the taking a toehold of the cancer as well as the spreading of it. Very, very effective. So this is really good research. Again, showing that how these antioxidant nutrients that are in red wine and green tea, they just have a powerful impact. Much more so than would have ever been guessed prior to this new era of science, which is now showing that nutrition is far and away the most important thing somebody can do to maintain their health. No doubt about it. Another study, green tea extract and quercetin protect the insulin-producing cells of the pancreas. Of course, your pancreas has what are called beta cells. And beta cells make insulin. They make a little bit of insulin without a meal, and they have it stored there. So you have a little bit of insulin just waiting for some food to come in. And when you eat, your beta cells then release the stored insulin, and then they go about making more insulin depending on how large the meal is. This insulin, of course, is needed to transfer the calories. Insulin's kind of like a taxi cab for calories. It transports them around your body so that your cells can be nourished. Very important functions of insulin. And of course, everyone knows about insulin resistance when insulin doesn't work so well. Well, that's all fine, but you got to remember too that when you're stressing out your metabolism and you're getting overweight and you're getting fatigued and you're eating too much fat, too much sugar, and too much junk, Your beta cells really have a hard time, especially when you snack in between meals. I mean, when you snack in between meals, you do not even give your beta cells time to get a new pre-dose of insulin ready for the next meal. And it's very, very stressful. And so the beta cells wear out. And so not only now, I mean, if they're attacked by the immune system or a virus or something, you get into blatant type 1 diabetes where there's no production from them. But we're now seeing in the metabolic syndromes that are showing up a combination of type 1 and type 2 diabetes, wherein we have people who actually, they're insulin resistant at their liver and in cells in their body, but their pancreas can't make insulin either. It's like a double whammy combination. This is very, very common these days. And here we see that these protective compounds, green tea extract, the EGCG, epicatechin epigallate fraction of it, as well as quercetin, were able to protect the beta cells of the pancreas from the stress of metabolic unfitness. And this is very important. You have to protect your organs. It's one of the things that the antioxidants that are typically in fresh fruits and vegetables, and you can certainly use these high efficient compound extract of these things, they are extremely health protecting. There's more data to show that that's the case here. A lot of studies came out last month at the meeting of the American Thoracic Society on quercetin. They have a lot of studies there besides that, but they had four studies relating to quercetin that involved preventing the replication of the common cold virus, something that, of course, has escaped modern medicine completely, and then also on allergies, which, of course, we've known about for a long time from the histamine aspect, but here they were shown to, quercetin was shown to block airway inflammation. And then even in more serious problems, we have a lot of people with get what's called chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. I mean, that's just a label. It's more common in smokers, obviously, because they've stressed the heck out of their lungs with all the tar, nicotine, and other chemical exposures. But smokers aside, there is a significant rise in chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's kind of like other issues. You know, you've got, say, for example, diabetes on the one hand and perfect blood sugar metabolism, and in reality everybody's somewhere on a sliding scale. You know, there's 1,000 shades of gray. Well, in the case of your lungs, you've got perfect respiratory fitness, and then you've got chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which basically means that the lungs are turned to scar tissue. It's kind of like, you know, Mickey Mantle liver. You know, it looks more like a fried piece of bacon than some healthy tissue. And so we have these medical terms that have been attached to severely deteriorated function of an organ reflected by scar tissue and that kind of thing. At any rate, the researchers showed here that quercetin, this was an animal study in a model of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and those given quercetin had an amazing improvement in lung function, ameliorating many of the processes that are causing the deterioration of lung tissue, including the fact that quercetin was turning on the SIRT1 gene in the lungs. Now, SIRT1 is that powerful anti-aging gene all the buzz is about for resveratrol, which turns it on in your fat cells and in your brain and so on. But here we're seeing quercetin turning it on in the lungs, having a very high ability to repair lung damage. So this is, you got to understand, this is mainstream lung respiratory related research. And they are showing and proving and publishing their work at their scientific symposiums, showing how powerful quercetin is at reducing the inflammation and the ability of the common cold virus to spread, the significant improvement in airway allergic inflammation, which, of course, is a common finding in anybody with asthma, and we have an epidemic of that now in our children, as well as dramatically improving lung function in a model of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is affecting more and more older Americans, partly because, of course, we live in a polluted environment, and that stuff's got to be breathed in and dealt with. So quercetin, lots of things it does, but there's some powerful new studies coming from very mainline, mainstream researchers. So that's very good news for people. Acetyl L-carnitine for blood pressure, blood sugar, and male sexual function. Well, this is kind of interesting, and as I say in my post here, imagine if there was a drug that could help fix high blood pressure, fix high blood sugar, and male erectile problems with no side effects. Now, rest assured, that would be an instant blockbuster. There would be zillions of people buying this. And, of course, my point of the story is that is what acetyl L-carnitine, based on the existing human studies, not just animal studies and cell studies, but human studies. The first study is Italian researchers taking at-risk cardiovascular patients 2,000 milligrams a day of acetyl L-carnitine over a 24-week period, and they found that the acetyl L-carnitine was able to lower their blood pressure, statistically significantly and improve their insulin resistance, meaning they had lower fasting blood sugars. Wow. And the benefits even maintained themselves for 8 weeks after the study was over. They didn't give them any, and they were still, in other words, they actually got some benefit, and the benefit was lasting even though they weren't taking the supplement after 24 weeks for the following 8 weeks. And so that's a very powerful human study showing how much the acetyl L-carnitine helps both blood pressure and blood sugar. In this study, it was clear that the acetyl L-carnitine raised adiponectin, which is a hormone that comes out of fat cells, kind of a cousin of leptin. But the adiponectin being raised, of course, improves insulin resistance at the liver. But adiponectin is now becoming very widely recognized as a cardiovascular anti-inflammatory, so it's not surprising that it helped to lower blood pressure also. So acetyl-L-carnitine seems to exert some of its benefits directly through the mechanism of raising adiponectin. Combining this with an earlier study, this one was with 4,000 milligrams of carnitine. 2,000 was the acetyl-L-carnitine form. This was in men ages 60 to 74, same kind of age group that would be most relevant to blood pressure and blood sugar. Although, those problems are happening certainly at younger ages, but still, same kind of category here. And they found that dose of the carnitines in this age group was more effective than testosterone at improving male erectile function and offsetting age-associated decline in that system. In fact, the acetyl-L-carnitine restored the normal erections that occurred during sleep. That's supposed to happen about four times. Most men, and when they're healthy, will wake up with an erection in the morning. And when that isn't happening, you can assume that the functionality of the system is declining. And so acetyl-L-carnitine directly improved that, very noticeable, as well as improving scores on a standard assessment tool called the International Index of Erectile Function. It improved those scores significantly, better than testosterone. So here we have something now with human studies that shows improved sexual health for men, improved blood pressure and blood sugar. And you gotta remember, a lot of guys go on blood pressure medication, and that reduces the flow of blood to their penis, which, of course, no way makes them more active. It has the opposite effect. So the medical remedies for blood pressure tend to be anti-sexual in, functionality. That puts a guy in a tough decision. Of course, I'm not in favor of any blood pressure medications unless you're a powder keg ready to blow. I think you need to get your system working better. Yes, you need to have better blood pressure if it's higher, but because you're healthy. And so you need to work on that as a priority, whether it means losing some weight or using some other nutrients that help your circulation. I mean, these things are very, very important. At any rate, acetyl-L-carnitine, helpful for guys. Helps women too, but that's actually helps build up endorphins in the nervous systems of women, and that helps them have better orgasms. So it works for both sexes, a little bit different reasons, but nevertheless, good stuff. Another study on acetyl-L-carnitine extends cellular lifespan. Well, this was in yeast cells. Yeasts are interesting. They're often studied. There's a lot of crossover gene functionality with the mitochondria of yeast and human gene functionality in mitochondria, because both the human genome and the yeast genome have been mapped. So they are a suitable tool for testing some things. Obviously, it's not human, but nonetheless, they are suitable for doing a lot of research because the precise gene signals are very similar in a number of different ways. So that's that. Now, in this particular study, yeast cells were extending their ability to defend themselves from cellular death when they were given acetyl-L-carnitine. It extended the normal mitochondrial activity. The mitochondria are the little cellular engines, and they're often linked together in a dynamic form. And of course, like say, as you exercise, you condition them to link together more, and then you get bigger and more horsepower and energy production. That's why energy begets energy. And that's why you want to condition yourself to become more fit and never lose that fitness by being lazy thereafter. But my point is, the ability of acetyl-L-carnitine to cause normal mitochondrial fitness and to prevent mitochondrial chaos, which is what occurs in aging, where the mitochondria don't link together and form good networks. They get all jumbled up, and they're just not very efficient at how they're supposed to be connecting with each other. It's supposed to be a synergistic activity. At any rate, acetyl-L-carnitine defends the mitochondrial integrity, thus aiding energy production for a more extended period of time and lifespan, in this case, the lifespan of yeast cells. But the data is fairly obvious that if you improve the mitochondrial function of your human cells, however you happen to do it, you're going to extend your life. So, another nice story on acetyl-L-carnitine's anti-aging characteristics. Vitamin C deficiency increases the risk for bone loss. I just don't think that vitamin C is appreciated like it once was. I mean, vitamin C, like vitamin E, they're kind of the granddaddies of the antioxidant movement. And for a lot of us these days, they're sort of like, well, that was yesteryear's nutritional and so on and so forth. But we should never lose sight of vitamin C or vitamin E. They are incredibly important for immunity, for healing things, for the whole backbone of the antioxidant system. Here we see that just a lack of vitamin C within the bone cells. Now, you've got bone cells. You've got, as I was talking earlier, you've got these bone cells that can become other things. And depending on the state of inflammation existing within the bone, you could make extra osteoclasts, which take bone down. That actually causes bone loss. Well, one of the reasons for that is just a lack of your basic antioxidants. In this case, this study showed that just lacking vitamin C could turn the tide so that bone cells go into an inflammatory response. So you've got many nutrients. You've got vitamin C, you've got the tocotrienols, you've got quercetin, you've got DHA, you've got all kinds of anti-inflammatory nutrients that are now showing science in terms of helping the bones maintain a less inflamed state, which then keeps the lid on too many osteoclasts that take down too much bone, which causes bone decay. So this, yes, we have the materials like the calcium and the protein and zinc and magnesium that help to build up the bones, but we also have nutrients that keep the bone environment friendly so that everyone in there is happy and doesn't get bent out of shape with a demolition crew gone wild. Vitamin C would certainly be on that list. I think 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C is a good idea for anyone. Higher amounts if you know it helps you not get sick or helps you recover from exercise. You know, it's kind of funny with vitamin C. Vitamin C was the nutrient it was the first cheating that was done in the Olympics. Yes, that's right. The Russian bodybuilders of 40 years ago were caught taking 20 grams of vitamin C a day. Vitamin C, of course, is required for the production of adrenal hormones, and these cheating Russians were just taking all this vitamin C, which was increasing their testosterone levels naturally, and they were just able to lift more weights, and oh my, imagine that. Okay, higher levels of vitamin B6 reduce the risk for lung cancer. A major study actually published in the Journal of the American Medical Association involving 400,000 participants shows that those with the highest blood levels of vitamin B6 and the amino acid methionine reduce the risk for lung cancer, even in smokers or former smokers. That's very powerful because we're always looking for a way to help smokers and former smokers, and vitamin B6 levels need to be elevated. Now, the reason they were testing methionine is an amino acid which makes homocysteine when it's metabolized by your liver. And when homocysteine levels elevate, lots of bad things happen. Vitamin B6, folic acid, B12, some other amino acids like serine, whatever, they process the homocysteine naturally to clear it. So if you're lacking B6, and the homocysteine levels elevate, then you're at risk for lots of things, one of which could be lung cancer. So they were thinking, though, although they didn't say it, there'd be no other reason to be testing methionine levels, that if your diet was high in methionine, you'd make more homocysteine unless you'd have more cancer. And that, of course, would lead to an attack on methionine-containing foods, which is about as advanced as Western medicine ever gets when they think about anything, is try to find a food they can blame that's a real food. So that would, of course, lead to the sulfur foods, which are dairy products and red meat, high in methionine. They would be bad listed as causes of lung cancer, because in this study would prove that. Well, it proved the opposite. It proved that you needed methionine levels to be higher to not get lung cancer, but you also needed your B vitamins present, so that as the methionine is making your liver work, and in all of these processes where you think, oh, high homocysteine is bad, yeah, well, the process that is involved in the production of homocysteine is sitting in the middle of hundreds of enzyme systems around your body involving the regeneration of physical structure, the health of your nerves, the ability of your body to detoxify things. You can't just not have the system go. So when you're on a low methionine diet, it doesn't go, and thus it doesn't work as well. So you not only need it to work, you need to then capture the side effects of it working, meaning when the homocysteine level goes up, you got to have your B vitamins. It's an integrated system, and this study offers it offers a good nutritional lesson for those at the Journal of the American Medical Association, since they were seemingly unable to explain what I just explained to you, which if they understood much about nutrition, it would appear to be common sense to them, but since they don't and they're just reporting findings, they didn't bother to try to explain why high methionine in the diet would be protective against lung cancer, because it defied their operating paradigm of what they were trying to prove. Now you know, however, what the story's all about. Okay, we're going to move on now to the questions for the week. And of course, if you have a question for me, please email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. First question comes from Marie. Everywhere I turn, no one has a definitive answer for tinnitus. My ear doctor says, get a hearing aid. I perceive that my level of tinnitus changes. The pitch changes constantly. When I am sick, the pitch goes up and gets louder. When I am well, it is less bothersome. What are your thoughts? Well, Marie, a couple of things. There's lots of different forces coming to bear on your ear, your inner ear, in a way that could produce tinnitus. You have pressure coming from your lymph system. That would be one. You have small circulation, tiny capillaries, so the inability of them to get blood to your ear, your small ear workings would be two. You have nerves, that if the little tiny nerve endings are damaged, the same thing can happen. That's three. And then you have the structure of the ear itself, which can, of course, be damaged from previous exposure to loud noise and other factors. So you have multiple factors involved with the problem that could potentially be involved with it. Now, the reason it gets worse when you're sick is because your lymph system is getting clogged and pressurized. And when your lymph system gets clogged and pressurized, those major thoracic ducts at the base of your shoulders push the pressure back up your head, and the eustachian tubes of your ears don't drain correctly anymore because the lymph below them is stuck. And so it pushes the pressure backwards, and that pressure then goes back to your ears settings and aggravates whatever problem you have there. So that's why it happens. That's why it's worse when you're sick. Immune Plus is the best remedy for that. And some people using Immune Plus regularly will find their tinnitus goes away because it is primarily a problem of lymphatic congestion. That is not everybody's problem, but it happens a lot. And it's usually a part of the problem, even if it isn't the cause of the problem, which you can say for sure is the case for you, Marie, because it's worse when you're sick. That's the only reason, really, it's worse when you're sick, mostly. Now, let's take some of these other issues. Circulation to your ear, tiny little capillaries, nourishing your ear with oxygen and nutrients. If you have inflammation going around in your body and you're not getting proper dilation, or you're on blood pressure medication, for example, and you know, when you're on blood pressure medication, I've seen tinnitus caused by blood pressure medication, mind you. People don't think about it. I don't know what's going on with your history here, Marie. I'm just bringing it up because we're talking about these things. But when you take blood pressure medication, you turn down circulation to small areas. The little capillaries don't nourish things as well. Smoking can do the same thing. So what happens here is you have a potential plaque forming in the small capillaries that will make the problem chronic. Or you just have acute inflammation, sort of like a sprained ankle, but they're sprained little things, you know, sprained little ones. So what you can do. You can use nutrients like Repair Plus and Daily Super E to help undo accumulation of either scar tissue or plaquing. I think both of those work quite well for that over time, along with increased aerobic activity to get circulation to go there better. You can use nutrients like Cardio Helper, which increase the friendly form of nitric oxide to your ear. That's a vasorelaxant. You can try to maximize your dose of magnesium, once again, to help vascular relaxation. Any of those things might help the circulation to your ear. That also can restore tinnitus. And then we have nerves and nerve inflammation that can also cause this problem. And a lot of times then we're involved with exposure to heavy metals or toxic things that are polluting. This would be mostly mercury and things of that sort. You can certainly use products like Daily Balancer or even higher amounts of lipoic acid to see if they will chelate some of that stuff out of the nerve endings. And then, of course, it's an issue of stress. So if you have a lot of stress and you're dumping stress chemicals out your nerve endings, it causes swelling. That can cause the tinnitus. The nutrients that help stress-related nerve swelling are quercetin, calcium AEP, acetyl L-carnitine, any of those things can help. Lipoic acid is a good mix with that. That's the nerve angle of it. Then you have the structure, the little micelles, the little filaments that tend to fall over as you get older and cause hearing discrepancies. I've never seen a study on it, but I like hyaluronic acid for that. Tissue rejuvenating things, Jointol, which has the hyaluronic acid in it. I mean, these are all options for you. Some of these things, Marie, you try them, you might see some benefit right away. That's fine. Others of these things, you may need to give a little bit of time for to see if it can change things over time, which if you're cleaning up plaque or scar tissue or inflammation out of nerves or something, it can take a while for it to respond. But there's plenty of hope for some benefit here. And the problem isn't easy to fix, especially if you've had it for a while, but it is improvable, and it is usually some combination of one of these four issues: backed up lymph system, circulation, nerves, and the actual structure within the ear. So I hope that helps you with that question, Marie. I wanted to give you a thorough answer because, by mistake, I forgot to answer your question last week, so I hope that makes up for it. All right, Brian says, I have a metabolic syndrome, big belly, overweight, high LDL, low HDL, high blood pressure, high triglycerides, high blood sugar, etc. I am trying to eat better, exercise, lower blood sugar, and lose weight. One of my weaknesses are sweet drinks like pop, iced tea with sugar, grape juice, etc. I have tried a couple alternative sweeteners, agave syrup and xylitol, and I like the way they taste. I've also tried stevia, but I can't stand the taste. Well, it's you and me both, Brian. I was wondering which sweetener would be a healthier choice, agave or xylitol. Well, Brian, I don't have any good news for you on this subject. You are addicted to sweet taste. Your sweet taste system on your tongue has been altered. That is fouling up your leptin receptors in your brain, and you need to go through sugar withdrawal. You should get a sweet enough taste from the carbohydrates and fruit that you eat, and an occasional small amount of sugar every now and then at the end of a meal. Not that big a deal once you're unaddicted. But right now, you need to go through some sort of a addiction recovery program to sweet tastes. There are many people in this boat. Your question is common, And whenever I'm on the radio, for example, talking about this, the phone board lights up. Everybody wants to know if this sweetener is okay or that sweetener is okay. I have never seen a population more addicted to sweet taste than the American population. Your taste buds are skewed. It is far more important that you focus on unaddicting yourself from sugar than it is on trying to figure out which sweetener may be the least problematic for you. Because they all are. Because they all cause and reinforce addiction. They reinforce poor leptin receptor function. They malprogram leptin in your brain to lock you in a poor metabolic state. And generally, they cause you to eat more as a result of that. Because especially if you use like a no-calorie sweetener and you get a sweet taste on your tongue and no calories coming in, then your body eats like crazy because it was expecting calories and never got it. And so there's a lot of problems with both calorie sweeteners and no calorie sweeteners. So very, very important. I would highly recommend you even get my tape series on the first set of the self-health for the 21st century, because when you have metabolic syndrome, you're out of options. You really need to buckle down and understand what's going on, and you need to work on it. And I'm not trying to give you a big lecture here, Brian. I know you're just a nice person to write, trying to write in and ask a question. I'm just trying to speak to the broader issue here. But work with your sweeteners. Well, you know, try to work them out of your life is my point. Gloria, I would like to say thanks for all the cutting-edge nutritional information you give in your great podcast. I learn a lot from you. I would like to ask, can one have subclinical hypothyroidism and adrenal fatigue at the same time, and what supplements would you recommend? Well, Gloria, I think it's more often than not that those two go along with each other. You kind of have to think of the thyroid system as your pace of activity. It's kind of like the gas pedal in the car, and the adrenal glands are like the oil for the car engine. They keep it lubricated and keep it from heating up and inflaming. And so once the adrenals begin to falter and can't keep up with the demands on a person, then the inflammation levels rise, and those inflammations are like a monkey wrench to the thyroid gland and literally throw it into a state of stress. Whether or not you get a frank lab score that's out of whack, or you just have all the symptoms of sluggish hypothyroid and adrenal fatigue, of which many symptoms overlap. But nevertheless, they're common. So my most basic approach for the thyroid, of course, is Thyroid Helper and Daily Energy Multi, and for adrenal fatigue, pantothene, vitamin C, and B vitamins like Daily Energy Multi. Those are your basic starting points, and that's what I always suggest. William says, I am 65. I only sleep 5 to 6 hours per night. I don't feel rejuvenated when I get up, yet I can't sleep more than this. I've tried some of your sleep products like melatonin, Sleep Helper, and Relaxamag, but my problem hasn't changed. I don't have any trouble getting to sleep. It seems many of my older friends have a similar problem. Why does this happen, and is there anything else I can try? Well, the reason it happens, I mean, you know, the sleep products like melatonin, Sleep Helper, and Relaxamag, they're designed to relax your system, take the stress out of your nerves, and help you get into a deeper sleep. So of those three in your situation, probably Sleep Helper would be the most helpful, and you might try higher doses of it. I don't know what dose you tried, but you might try even up to 3 or 4 of them before bed. But here's the thing. What happens as you get older is your hormone system, it's kind of like a singer that doesn't hit the high notes anymore. So if you need a peak of growth hormone, which you definitely need in order to feel rejuvenated when you sleep at night and to maximize fat burning at night and to wake up feeling refreshed, you may not be able to hit that level. So what is growth hormone? It's repair hormone. So what would then be the best options for that to try to induce deeper sleep? Well, there were a number of studies a few years back about acetyl-L-carnitine being able to naturally promote the release of growth hormone when taken at bed, which is a great reason to take acetyl-L-carnitine at bed. As I was mentioning earlier, it also helps testosterone function and male function. But certainly you can use that can help release the growth hormone. And then I really like Jointol before bed. I take 4 Jointol every night. I run a lot, but I take a lot of that product, but I find it helps me sleep deeper because it is so good at not only uninflaming my body, but also helping to provide the raw materials to repair during sleep. So my point being, you're trying to release growth hormone better, get a better growth hormone signal going. You're trying to cut inflammation with something you're taking before bed, and you're trying to fuel repair, and you're just trying to find a mix that works for you. When you get that right for yourself, there's a lot of options here, William, but when you get that right for yourself, you will sleep longer. I promise you, even at your age. I've seen it many, many times that it can go. Now, if you're sleeping 5 or 6 hours a night and you're older and you feel great, okay, let's not worry about it, but you still might want to try some of these things and see if it helps. Fran says, I get a headache on the top of my head every time one of these storm fronts goes through. My husband thinks I am imagining things. Is it possible that weather fronts can cause headaches? Yes, Fran, they can. And again, this would be another version of a lymph problem, because what's happening here is that the weather front, which is a pressure system, is causing stagnation in your lymph system. And once those thoracic ducts up in the top of the shoulder area, they get clogged, they push pressure up into your head. So people will report headaches, you know, they're almost like sinus headaches, or at the top of the head, or going up the back of their neck, could be any one of them, or even all three of them. And that's the exact kind of headaches. These are pressure headaches, and that's what the storm front's causing. So a lot of people will just, you know, take a big dose of Immune Plus before they go to bed on storm front days, or even during the day, if it's happening, and that tends to help. Repair Plus is another good one, but there's no need to have to go through those headaches. It's a fairly manageable problem. Jim says, how much weight should I lose before I try to get off my cholesterol and blood pressure medications? I'm 50 pounds overweight, and I'm in pretty good shape, though I need to spend more time exercising. Jim, it's good that you're committing yourself to some sort of a program here. I would suggest that you lose 20% of your weight before you start trying to reduce your medications. Of course, that's just kind of generic advice. Obviously, ask your doctor. The reason I say that, and some people, you know, might want to just quit things when they want to, but that's, you know, I mean, if it depends kind of how long, especially with blood pressure medication, how long you've been on it. But here's my point. My point is, you want to get your body in the process of weight loss, even while you're on these things. And sure, cholesterol medication can make you fatigued and tired, and blood pressure medication likewise can do the same thing and make it more difficult for you to lose weight. But you've got to get going. You've got to work the diet, the rules of the leptin diet, and enough nutritional support to help you get in the process of weight loss. Once you've lost about 20% of the weight you need to lose, you've changed the dynamics of cardiovascular risk in your body. Now you've got something to work with. And so now you're not in the same risk pattern as you are when you're not in the process of weight loss. Now if you start to work with your doctor to lower either of those medications, you're in a much safer zone for doing that than just doing it because you don't like them. And so you want to, of course, have adequate antioxidants. There's lots of good nutrition that you can use, but it's the actual process of weight loss, which is what you're asking anyway. And I like, as a rule of thumb, 20% of your desired amount of weight, which, you know, it's like in your case, it's 10 pounds of weight loss, because you've buckled down and gotten yourself in that process. And when you've done that, you've created a situation of safety for yourself. Now you have more free play to work with these things. So that's the probably the safest way to go about it. Last question of the day is from Ellen, who says, I have such dry eyes and dry lips. I'm constantly putting drops in and have a lot of trouble wearing my contacts. I'm always putting something on my lips to keep them moist. The rest of my skin is not that dry. Is there a reason I have a problem with my eyes and my lips? Well, yes, Ellen, and it's most likely your digestive tract, but it could be something else. My point is that your eyes and your lips and your digestive tract have a very high need for something called mucoproteins. These are lubricant proteins that are made of from N-acetylglucosamine, actually. And the cells lining the surfaces of your eyes and lips, as well as your entire digestive tract, need a lot of this stuff to buffer wear and tear and keep lubrication being produced. So you actually make this lubricant protein substance. It's called a mucoprotein. It's made from N-acetylglucosamine. So when you have, normally when you have this problem, there's something going on in your body that is causing a decline in the ability of your body to keep up with the repair demand. Now it could be also in your joints, which also have a need for lubricant materials. But whatever it is, it's there. And your eyes and your lips do not get first priority compared to your digestive tract. Your digestive tract, oddly enough, unless you're pregnant, is considered to be the top system in your body that must be maintained. Remember, it's both the restaurant and the restroom, and it's very important to getting things in and getting things out. And without that functionality, you're not going to live very long. So that's why the digestive tract has a very high priority. And if it's inflamed, the need for mucoproteins to repair the lining of the digestive tract and attempt to keep it working can be a 10 or 15-fold normal needs. And your body will take from one area to give to another. That's why now the lubricants needed in an attempt to, say, help your digestive tract will be taken away from your eyes and your lips. That's the most likely reason, although you can have problems in your mouth or problems in your eyes. However, I use the product GI and Muscle Helper. It's a combination of glutamine, the main amino acid that makes up the lining of your digestive tract, and N-acetylglucosamine. That's a special kind of glucosamine. It's not the same as the kind we use for joints, per se. It will help joints, but it's one that is very good for the digestive lining and very good for dry eyes and dry lips. And I suggest taking anywhere from a half a teaspoon to a teaspoon or more of that two or three times a day, specifically to the point that you know you don't have dry eyes and dry lips, which is kind of obvious. And if that isn't clearing it up, you really do need to pinpoint and work on something that might be punching something in the nose, such as your lining of your gut. Maybe there's some hostility going on in there, and that's kind of like the source of the problem that's causing this draining of your lubricants. So that's what that's caused by, Ellen, and fixing it always resolves it. It's a pretty common problem, believe it or not. And so that's the answer. So if you have a question for me, please email it to me, askbyron@wellnessresources.com. And that's it for the podcast this week. Thanks for tuning in. And of course, I will be back next week with yet another podcast. Take care. Have a great and healthy week.
The Weekly Wellness Update podcast is produced by Wellness Resources Incorporated. All rights reserved. For more information on the topics and news covered in today's podcast, visit wellnessresources.com. To email Byron a specific health question, send it to askbyron@wellnessresources.com. The information presented in this podcast is for informational purposes. It is not medical advice for the treatment of any condition or illness. You should not use the information in this podcast for diagnosis or treatment of any health problem or to discontinue the use of any medication that has been prescribed to you. Consult your physician or healthcare professional for such needs. Statements made during this podcast regarding any Wellness Resources dietary supplement products have not been evaluated by the FDA. Wellness Resources dietary supplement products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.